for progressive artistic developments. In Paris, Copland had the good fortune to encounter an extraordinary teacher, Nadia Boulanger. An exceptionally insightful musician, she was remarkably familiar with a broad range of music, from Palestrina and other Renaissance composers to Bach and Debussy. But her greatest asset was her understanding of and enthusiasm for the works of the modern masters. She was especially close to Stravinsky, and in effect served as that composer's teaching surrogate. Moreover, she had a keen critical ear, an ability to hear a new piece and quickly comprehend both its strengths and weaknesses. Copland's study with Nadia Boulanger included work in harmony, counterpoint, conducting, score reading, and composition. It was, as he later recalled, the decisive musical experience of my life. His severe, extremely demanding teacher not only expanded his musical horizons, but encouraged him to take more bold steps as a composer. The confidence she had in my talents and the belief she had in me, Copland later recalled, were crucial to my development. As important as his studies with Nadia Boulanger were, Copland also benefited from the broader musical environment of Paris. In the French capital, he had the opportunity to hear the latest works of Stravinsky and the French modernists. The novelty of their music, which seemed so attuned to life in the 1920s, greatly excited the young musician from Brooklyn. Copland absorbed much from Stravinsky, Ravel, Mio, and Poulenc, and these influences soon became apparent in the sharp dissonances, brittle textures, and angular rhythms of his own compositions. But even in his first attempts to speak the new musical language, Copland did so with an unmistakably American accent. The rhythms and melodic inflections of jazz, which had fascinated him during his boyhood, found their way into a number of his works of the 1920s, such as his piano concerto. Copland returned to the United States in 1924 and attempted to make his living as a composer. He lectured on music for 10 years at the New School in New York. With a colleague, Roger Sessions, he organized an important series of concerts devoted to new music by American composers. He also began writing articles about his fellow composers and about new trends in composition for the journal Modern Music. During this time, Copland lived in extremely modest circumstances, residing occasionally in an upstate New York artist's colony or sometimes in Mexico, places where he could stretch his meager income. As late as 1938, he hesitated to go to Boston, where the orchestra was rehearsing one of his pieces because he could not afford a hotel. His bank balance at the time showed he had just $6.93 to his name. But despite the pressure to earn a living, composing remained Copland's principal focus. During the 1920s and early 1930s, he produced a series of increasingly assured pieces for orchestra, voices, various chamber ensembles, and piano, all in a modern, yet clearly American style. The brash energy, nervous rhythms, and gritty dissonance of the music captures something of the feel of the Roaring Twenties. But in the decade that followed, the social environment in which Copland was working began to change dramatically. During the 1930s, the rise of fascism in Europe provoked alarm among Americans, and the Great Depression brought on an economic and moral crisis unprecedented in the nation's history. These events triggered a wave of populist sentiment and a widespread appreciation for the strength of character exhibited by ordinary Americans during the difficult 1930s. Like many artists, and more than most, Copland was strongly affected by this new strain of populism, which found expression in works like John Steinbeck's novel, The Grapes of Wrath, and the paintings of Thomas Hart Benton. Despite his European sojourn, or perhaps because of it, Copland was thoroughly democratic in his outlook, convinced of the dignity of common working people. Accordingly, he began to question the self-consciously modern style he had for years cultivated in his music, a style that may have intrigued a small handful of sophisticates, but was largely ignored by the general public. And so, in an attempt to reach a broader audience, Copland deliberately set out to alter his compositional style. "I felt that it was worth the effort," he later declared.